Hello and welcome back to the Master of None podcast. I am your host, Stephen Murphy, and I'm joined by the regular rugby crew that is Sam and Westy. And we are back with some more positive news this week, which is fantastic after the last couple of miserable podcasts. We were off last week, so again, apologies for that. I was out of the country, but we are back now and we are on the run into the end of the season. But before we get stuck into the rugby, as always, we'll check in with the boys. Westy, how art thou?
I'm pretty good. Had a nice weekend. My brother was up. We had a match yesterday, which we won. Started the Ard na Craig, a good old cup here in Connacht. Not a lot else. We won, so it was a good start. Came on early in the centre, which was news to me. But defensively, I was pretty woeful, but I managed to cross the whitewash for the first time in a while. So that was the perks of coming on. Backs do nothing, man. I was just running in and tapping the ball down over the line. Forwards do all the hard work.
We got to expand on this because it was in the WhatsApp last night. I asked the boys how they got on, and then Sam casually drops in that both he and Westy were playing centre partnership, and that he scored 2 tries, and Westy scored 1. And I thought it was an April Fool's joke all over again. But no, that was to happen. So yeah, Westy, how did you end up in the centre? Was it injuries? Was it just they saw your natural talent eventually?
Yeah, we had a surplus of forwards. I think for the first time ever.
I think they called that a cacophony of forwards. I could be wrong though.
We did have our own cacophony of second rows knocking around. We had no centre replacements. So it was kind of a break glass in case of emergency thing. And then one of our lads got a pretty severe head injury about 15 minutes into the game to get a few staples in his head. So best wishes to Jim if he listens. So came on, managed to survive in the centre for just over an hour. Missed some horrific tackles. That's what I'll say, right? You know, forwards, you're involved, right? It's close forwards, you're making hits, your head is always down. I was on for 20 minutes before I touched the ball. Like, it was just, you know, I was just kind of waiting there. But when you fuck up in the backs, it's far more costly than when you fuck up in the forwards. That's definitely true.
Yeah, and talk to me about your try. What happened? I'm assuming it was a full pitch run.
Yeah, it's been called Essence of Bundy, I think, is if you Google that, that's the highlight that you'll see.
Great. By the way, if that was an aftershave, I'm buying that in a heartbeat. If they could somehow do that.
It was a great... Was it a W pass, Sam, or did Sam offloaded to me?
It was a screen pass behind
Screen pass behind you, yeah.
Perfectly called by the 10. Knew to avoid me whatsoever.
It was about, I'd say, maybe 10 metres out, maybe a little bit closer. Got it. Had acres of space out to the right. Do you know? Like, there was... Like, if I had passed it once and the pass again... Rory would have walked backwards over the line and put it down. There was so much space out there, but typical forward fashion, I put my head down and burrowed for the line. And just when it looked like I might have been held up, Sam arrived behind me. Now, you know, the critics will debate whether or not I had the ball down, but Sam got the guy cleared over so the referee could clearly see I had the ball down. So it was a Sam effort, really. I mean, what you really should be asking is how come Sam didn't score 3 tries, because that's a great story.
Yeah, well, that's... First of all, congratulations, Westy. Is that your first ever try as a back?
I didn't have my growth spurt until I was about 17, so I played a couple of seasons at wing. Now, I had a shockingly low try scoring rate because I was... If it's possible, I was actually worse at rugby back then than I am now. But it's not my first... Probably my first for the centre, definitely.
Well, congratulations. I'm very, very proud of you. Sam, sounds like man of the match stuff over here. Talk me through your nearly hat-trick.
Definitely not man of the match stuff. I actually had a very mediocre game. Made 2 or 3 tackles. Was kind of stepped pretty badly for one, not one of their tries, but for one big break, and then was caught out of position for a chip over the top, which I maintain was just good play by their out half. He tapped a free kick, like it looked like he was going out the back line, and then just chipped it over onto an on-runner. So it was quality move, in fairness. Scored 2 tries and then butchered a chance. I didn't realize, because I get in trouble a lot for not passing. That's one of my downfalls. I don't really pass that often. So I was trying so hard to be good that I got put into space by the fullback on a kind of a split backline move. We were on the right. And I didn't realize that I could have walked the fucking ball in from just inside the 22. Thought there was kind of a 2-on-1, so I went for the pass and threw it straight into touch, right behind me, man, over his head. Terrible, terrible pass. And then everyone was like, what were you passing for? The try line was open. I was like, oh, geez, that's even worse. So I had to make up for it later by stepping a bunch of the tiredest lads. I felt so bad for them now. They were wrecked. They had one sub playing into the wind all the second half. Yeah, but I managed to get my steps on.
Brilliant. Happy days. Well, that's a great win. On to the next round of the Ardna Craig. So happy days, boys. Well done. My weekend was not as exciting as that, that's for sure. I was recovering from jet lag and just basically sitting around the house doing not much. But went for the windiest walk ever in Renville on Sunday morning. That was crazy, crazy wind. But I did, that's when I text you guys the best to look in that wind. That was, I know... Renville, obviously, compared to Corinthians, is a bit different, but still. Yeah, I didn't, unfortunately, let's get stuck into the rugby. Didn't get to watch the Connacht game because of my, I do a radio show at Loch Ray. Got to listen to the last 10 minutes on the radio, which is, I haven't done that much in my life, and it's not fun. And it's nothing to do with the radio itself. It's just, you just can't, I'm not good at imagining what I'm hearing or you know, trying to picture it. But regardless, let's get stuck into it, lads. Connacht 40. Pow, 30 points. A massive away win. The first away knockout win in Europe for Connacht. As always, not done the easy way, done the hard way, but that's what's exciting about it. But a huge, huge win. Down 8 points at halftime. Score 28 points in the second half. Concede 10. That is not bad by any stretch of the imagination. Let's get stuck into the game, Westy. First of all, before we even get that, how needed was this? Not just this win, but the performance itself, just to get a bit of positive kind of talk and a bit of positive momentum around the club after a kind of a rough couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think to kind of come out of the blocks so well and score early showed a lot of intent. I think it showed a fair bit of character after the last few weeks as well. Like I've kind of been quite vocal in the last couple of weeks about how I think the league should be our focus. Like our goal is to make sure we qualify for the Champions Cup again next year. I am aware that if you win the Challenge Cup that you do qualify, but you know our best bet is always to make sure we're in a strong position in the league and build from there. Especially when you know the last two league games haven't gone our way and we're in a kind of race against time or a limited points battle, or whatever you want, however you want to articulate it. To come out so well out of the blocks and show that intent, and again to come out again at a half time and show intent. And I know we very much conked that we score and then we almost instantly concede again that draws the score, and we do score at the end of the game as well, which kind of puts a bit of gloss on it. But again, considering that it was 3 points and they made one mistake and we were so good at capitalizing on it and striking again, it's not necessarily, we wouldn't associate ourselves with being that clinical. That they had a knock on, we had a scrum and we got them back and we score in the corner. I think the attitude, yeah, and the character we showed in the game is the most important thing. It shows that we've taken learnings from the last 2 weeks. You know, we didn't have the podcast last week, but me and Sam were talking about it, and we did improve obviously from the Lions game. It would be hard to not have improved. But there was a lot of positives in the Benetton game. And it looks like we carried that forward. So my main thing, I'm not sure if I believe we can win the Challenge Cup just yet. I'm not sure if they've convinced me. Away to Benetton is great. It gives us a chance to right or wrong from last week. But you know they will also be looking at it as a very winnable fixture for themselves. I think it does a lot for our confidence to push us forward. It shows our development. You know, as you said, a first away win in the knockouts of the Challenge Cup is amazing for the club. And again, that can't be underestimated. But I just hope we can bring that confidence forward. Hopefully to the Benetton game. I think it's a winnable game. I think we could definitely go over there and do a job. But we need to carry that confidence back to the league. Because again, I still think that's, for us still, that should be the primary focus. I think it should be the primary focus going forward.
Yeah, I think we all agree in that. When you do win the game, you kind of, the buzz of winning a European knockout game is always, it's always fun. It's
never, and I'm not saying at all that we should, you know, as I said, I think we could win the Benetton game. I'm not saying that we should pack it in. I'm not saying we should have packed this game in. I think the results and the confidence that you take are still really, really important, but I think we have to build on that now. If we go and if we get hockey now at Benetton in the next round and then we ship a couple of results in the league, it's worth nothing to us. It's how we carry this result forward that's really going to define the end of the season.
Yeah, massively. Sam, let's talk about the return of Finlay Beelam and Bundy Aki. Bundy in particular. Sometimes I think we forget, just because how little, especially Bundy, plays for Connacht, that sometimes you can forget how impactful he can be on the team and on a game day. But he was in particularly amazing fashion against Pau, and a reminder just of, we obviously know how good he is with Ireland, but how good he can be for Connacht and the difference he makes in big games like that.
I think we've seen some positive stuff from Bundy this season, more so than the last couple of seasons. He's been out. He was pre-having, I think, for the World Cup in the last couple of years. He saw that in the way that he managed to get to the World Cup and be fit through that. And in this game, again, he had such a positive impact. He brought a lot. He just brings a lot of attention to that 12, which opens it up. I think Hawkshaw actually had a really good game. I know you're not his biggest fan at 13. And I do like him at 13, but I don't think that's his actual position. But I think that having a player like Bundy instead of Cathal Ford or Tom Daly, no slight on them, it brings an element of attention from a defensive line, brings forwards in closer. And he did, he pulled it back a couple of times. Their try just in the stroke of halftime was because he tried that pull back one too many times. It just didn't go to hand and they capitalized on it, and then some weak enough defending, but a good cover back. So I think having him like that and in that manner can be such a positive thing for Connacht. And we see it with Ireland all the time. He is just a better standard of player than the rest of the players around him. There's no denying that. There's questions about his mentality over the last couple of years. And I actually think that was quite unfair, because I think a lot of what happens to Bundy is Bundy's very much a form player. You see it with Ireland. You know, if he's in every week, he's playing at his best. And with Connacht, he gets dropped in with a different centre partnership. He's sometimes at 13, sometimes at 12. He goes long periods of time without playing and then gets himself suspended for 8 weeks. And, you know, all of that makes it quite hard to get into the rhythm of playing with a standard of player that, no slight on any of the Connacht players, are not Irish international players. You know, he's not, you know, Robbie Henshaw and Johnny Sexton inside him and Gibson Park and scrum half. There is just a step down to Connacht when he is playing there. There's no denying that. And it takes some time to get into the rhythm of it. So I'm really glad that he played the way he did that game, because I think that bodes well for us going into Benetton next week. And then I don't know how he's going to get managed for the rest of the season. I can't see him playing every single minute of every game. I think that they might risk not playing him in the Zebre game, you know, and the Dragons game, and maybe trying to keep him if we do get through Benetton. But to have him playing that way, I think, gives such confidence to the likes of a Hawkshaw. I think Jack had his best game in a long time. Like, JJ came on, was outstanding when he played as well. And I think that a lot of that is to do with the attention that Bundy just brings. You know, Ford is a fantastic player with a hugely high ceiling, but you can't compare him to, you know, Bundy, World Player of the Year nominee, Six Nations Player of the Year nominee, Six Nations Player of the Team 2 years in a row, a Lion. Like, that is a higher standard. And then Finlay as well coming on, you saw from the outset what he brings. He had a bit of trouble in the scrum, but I think he worked it out. But he's such an aggressive, fast moving tight head. He's different to other tight heads. You know, he's not that same sort of Tyke Furlong. Like, Tyke Furlong is dancing people. Finlay plays tight head as if he's playing 6 or 7. Like, he's coming on to it at such pace. He's got his hands there. And those are all things that I really like the depth of Connacht have, but you can't replace that standard of player.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I want to highlight particularly the back row, because back row in most teams now is sometimes the winning and losing in games. Jared Butler unfortunately went off early, but when you're bringing Conor Oliver off the bench, it's by no means any slouch. Seamus Hurley-Lanton, it was also very, very impressive. But we have to highlight Cian Prendergast. Cian Prendergast has been touted for stardom for couple of years now, and a game like the other day, I think, is where he does show that sort of extra quality that could potentially make him an Irish international starter soon. But Westy, a game like that, especially away from home, when you have to dig deep, Cian Prendergast tends to show up in those games, doesn't he? He rarely has a bad game, but he's always seems to be up for the big occasions too, and that's a sign of a great player, surely.
Yeah, and the two tries to boot as well, especially the second one, as I say, when the game is over, to kind of show that want and that aggression to get there, to get over the line. That speed, yeah. I think one of the things that we've said, and you know, many others have said it as well, about Cian Prendergast over the last few years is kind of his, maybe his over-eagerness at times. You know, he was always good for a penalty or two, or, you know, a kind of a brain fart maybe, or a... a silly penalty, a breakdown or a mistake. And I think there's even examples of that probably still in this game. I'm not saying it's gone completely from his game, but what we're seeing happen with Cian Prendergast is him grow into kind of a great kind of starting and a great squad player, a great squad man, a leader within that squad, I think, which is really important. So yeah, I think he's just kind of gone from strength to strength in the last, particularly this year. I think he's bulked up a bit in size as well, and he's still carrying it quite well. I think that he is the type of player that's really important to have a contract to hold on to. We've seen a lot of contract renewals been announced. You know, we've been doing well to, you know, keep our prop stocks replenished quite well. We've seen Conor Oliver renew, and I think Seamus Harry Langdon as well renewed. I'm not sure when Prendergast's contract is up. Is it this year? Is it next year? 2 years?
He signed a 3-year deal last year, as far as I remember.
Great, yeah. Because, I mean, I think one of the things I've said kind of to you guys over the last couple of weeks is I think what we're kind of missing in Connacht necessarily, and we're kind of getting there, but like what we need is a kind of 6 to 8, 6 to 9 players that are going to play the bulk of our fixtures, that are going to be there, are going to be starters, that have kind of nailed on positions, that can be leaders within that squad, that can play a low or a high floor brand of rugby. And then we can start in our bunnies, we can start in our max when they're available. We have you have license then for the likes of Shane Jennings to create something out of nothing, to bring us that extra spark, because the floor has already been brought up so high. And I think that's sometimes with the manner of rotation that we see in Connacht, that's something that we don't always have, is that stable base to give our kind of X-factor players that ground to shoot off. I think not only has kind of Cian Prendergast started to show that he's capable of being one of those, you know, floor bringing up players, but he also has that kind of extra bit to give, that extra bit of dynamicism, that extra bit of skill. And I know that we're still, you know, when we talk of Ireland caps, that we're still quite well stocked in terms of back row players. But I think there's still more to come from Cian Prendergast. I don't think it'll be too long before he's back in Ireland squads, back in rotation. And yeah, I thought it was a great performance. I thought Oliver in particular for me though was outstanding coming off the bench. I thought he was everywhere. And I love to see that work rate and aggression from him. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he is, and kind of reminding us of the form he was in the last couple of years too. I want to highlight Ballina, man. Westie Dave Heffernan, I think, had one of his best games in a long time. They said in the radio that, you know, they spoke the day before, and it was very clear the aggression in his eyes and how pumped up was for, and some of the collisions he ran into was epic, playing the full 80 minutes too. Sam, like, what was it about this weekend, do you think, that so many players just stepped up to the mark? Was it just the occasion? Was it being pissed off the last couple of weeks? Because I think they've said themselves they were embarrassed at home with the Lions. It's great to see that they are pissed off about that, right?
I think it's all a multitude of things. You've heard quiet rumblings of questioning their attitudes, questioning the coaching, and I think that they all seem to be buying into the coaching. Those who aren't buying into the coaching, I feel, are the ones that we're questioning why they're not involved. I'd say that they're the type that maybe aren't quite on board or aren't quite getting it. But I think you seem to see them trying quite hard for them, knowing it's a learning curve, but being embarrassed by results and performances the last few weeks. People like Heffernan as well, like you said, that's his best game in a long time. Like, Heffernan's a hugely experienced Connacht player. He's captained many times, he's Irish caps, he's one of the highest caps in Connacht's history, but his position is under pressure. Like, Dylan Tierney Martin has had good spells and he's been almost ahead of him for a while. Tyke McElroy is the same, and then Owen de Butler's on the bench there. He's young, he's raw, but he's highly touted and he's highly thought of as well. So I thought for Heffernan to have the game he had was just the showing of the entire squad. I think it was the attitude that they all had for himself. You know, Blade, who's been he's been questioned a little bit recently, and, you know, he didn't have his best game, but he went the whole 80 as well because of, out of necessity, probably. Matthew Devine just back from injury and still quite raw. I think that showed the character of the whole team, and players like Heffernan will be feeling under pressure because they've been there a long time, and it's, you know, starting to creep up on 8, 9, 10 years since they won the trophy. And those players who've been around for that entire time, you know, their positions could be in question. The management could be looking at some of these players that have been around a long time and start to think, you know, well, maybe we do need to just change it up. Maybe we need to change the standard of player we have. And I think he showed, you know, he was down within 40 seconds and I was like, oh, Jesus, this is going to be a long day. But he got back up and he played the 79 and a half minutes that were left. And fair play to him, because it was the best game I've seen him. He carried like he did a couple of years ago. He was everywhere. He was getting turnovers, getting involved. His line-out throwing was very good. I thought it was a really round, well-rounded performance. It showed, you know, obviously the standard of hooker now in Ireland was Sheehan and Kelleher, and that is so high, but it showed why he has Irish caps. It shows why he was thought of higher than kind of the rest of the Connacht squad at the time, and why he was involved when other Connacht players weren't, because he is a fantastic player. And he's got a lot of size, but he's also a lot of power and athleticism. I think in school he was a back row, and that shows in the way that he plays, much like I said with Finlay. So I was impressed by that, and I think that his attitude kind of summed up the attitude of all the players. And I think, yeah, you put the nail on the head. It probably is out of embarrassment, out of anger, out of a mix of feelings based on the last couple of weeks, you know, not getting the results they have, not having secured top eight yet, you know, still being in that dogfight. And wanting to lay down a marker, and maybe wanting to lay down a marker considering what happened in Europe last year with that away to Benetton. You know, like this team, they want to show that they're doing it, and it probably doesn't sit right with them when they hear pricks like us or other fans questioning their mentality or questioning their commitment. And you know, I'm glad to see that they've gone out and done that, because it's given everyone a lift. Like, instantly, just talking to anyone this week, like, one result that was actually shaky enough for the first half, like, one result has just changed the attitude and the mentality of a lot of people. And I think that that's how fickle sport is. But you have to buy those good feelings, and you buy it by putting yourself on the line like that. If, and it didn't happen, but if Pau had just gotten a penalty, draw a level, gotten a drop goal and won it, but we had that performance, I still probably would have been on this podcast being quite positive about the performance. And players like Heffernan wouldn't have made a difference. That last minute try to make it a 10-point game wouldn't have changed at all the standard of game that Heffernan had and others.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It, again, not to be back on the negative side of things, there was so many things, especially the restarts, where you're just smashing your head against the wall, being like, how is this keep happening over and over and over again? And, you know, to show you how far ahead you would have been of that Pau team. And again, that's why I think we get frustrated, because we know, and they said on the radio yesterday, we know how good this team can be. And you see performances like on yesterday, even, it's clear how talented this group is. And when it all clicks, it's so powerful. Like, putting 40 points up on a French team away from home is by no means an easy feat. But they just get in their own way so many times. And by all accounts, that's what the likes of Mark Sexton now and the coaching staff are trying to get rid of. But it's just frustrating at the same time, because, look, don't get me wrong, these exciting European wins are fun. I'd love a 20-point boring game win. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd love to get to that stage. I don't want all of these wins to be such a shock and such a bloody worrisome fixture to watch. But still, it's fantastic. Westy, I think we'd obviously next Saturday, I think half 12, a Benetton game. I think what we'd love, obviously we'd love a win, but what we'd love is, I'd love to see a pissed off Connacht going out there looking to right a wrong, looking to get one over on a team that just got one over on them, especially in the same stadium, 2 weeks apart. That's what we'd love to see. Do we think we will see that from this Connacht team?
I agree, and that's what I hope, and that's kind of what I said when we were talking about the result as a whole. Like, I do think it's a big opportunity to go back and win a winnable game and to right wrongs that, you know, correct mistakes that we made last time we were in Benetton. Whether we will see or not is different. It's still going to be a tough place to go. You know, Benetton again, like it's they're a great team at home. Like, they're a great team. Full stop. Sorry, it's not necessarily. You know, years ago it was a game that you should be winning, and now it is a very, very difficult fixture. I think we will see. I think if this week is anything to go by, we will, as you said, we will see that fight back from Connacht. That will to right or wrong, that will to correct, that will to take this momentum forward. I think it's been a while, probably, for Connacht since we got a statement win. Now, I know you're going to say we got the one against Bristol over Christmas, but you do have the breakdown for Six Nations that disrupts your momentum, and obviously, you know, even in the games we had during the Six Nations, the Ospreys game and the Scarlets game, you know, neither of those were strong performances, or neither of those were performances that filled us with confidence. And then we saw what happens at the end. So I think hopefully, because this is a little bit of a statement win within a cluster of games, I think we will see a strong outing from Connacht next week. But again, I would fall back on the point that it's not necessarily the result next week, it's the performance. It's the will to go out there and right the wrong. And the will to carry this kind of form forward. Like, we won the game, but we were far from perfect. Like, we made a lot of silly errors. We made a lot of mistakes. You know, we were put in really good positions, I'd say, by, like, Bolton's amazing pitch run and try that then had him carted off because he was gone. we had other situations where we were away, we had drop balls, we had knock-ons. Like, it's far, far from perfect. But again, as you said, it's a very difficult place to go and get the win. So I hope it fills them with confidence. I hope we see that kind of that cohesion take a step up, because I think that's what we will need against Benetton. I think what's killed us a lot in some of the closer fixtures this year is how wasteful we've been with territory and opportunity. And I think that that is one thing that we probably did a bit better in POW. You know, when we got... Well, not every time, but a lot of chances we were given, half a chance, we were good at capitalising. And again, our defence, despite the squad, was actually quite strong. Our pressure on their attack was quite good. Again, mistakes made, tackles missed, try and score it, but the attitude seems to be there. So I think if we can tighten up some of the little kind of nooks and crannies between that, some of the little partnerships and some of the shapes and the defensive efforts, I think that we will put ourselves in a very strong position against Benetton.
I think you highlight as well, kind of, Wes, you talk about like not being able to capitalize on possession and position this season. I think we saw it actually a little bit in the game where they did try and barrel over a couple of times in the 22 and it didn't come good. Then you see what we did at the end there with Keane Prendergast getting out on the wing. I think that's more what you want in the Connacht. Earlier on in the season, Joe Joyce was getting a lot of go forward ball off barrel and kind of things, but I think teams worked out that he was kind of the primary one doing it and getting it, and it didn't. It's not been as effective the last while. I don't get me wrong. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's one of our best players, and what a signing he's been. But he's not been as barnstormingly effective coming short that way, and we've not been getting over it, whereas we were earlier on in the season getting over a bit more inside the 22 by keeping it tight. So I think that they kind of, when they changed up for Darren Murray, who had a phenomenal game, I think he had the most carries out of any Connacht forward in the 25 minutes he was playing. When they changed him up for that, and you started to see them kind of open up a little bit in the way that they carried. They were still carrying, but it was wider off 9, it was wider a little bit off 10, it was a pullback there, and Niall and Dara kind of do that really well, whereas I don't think that's Joe Joyce's game. So I don't think Connacht have the capability of breaking you down and beating you up inside the 22 and barreling over and getting the try, because I haven't seen it consistently. You know, one or two this year, but where we looked much better was JJ and Jack both getting it a bit wider, getting it a bit deeper, playing a bit more, and then letting those athletic forwards that we have, those hard ball carriers, those hardy bastards like Conor Oliver, Seamus Hurley Langdon, let them run in a little bit of space. You know, and that's where we're much more effective.
Yeah, no, exciting times ahead. Shout out as well to the Connacht clan and away supporters who made the trip. You could definitely hear their voices being heard. And I'm sure there's plenty of sore heads this morning leaving some airport in Italy somewhere. France. So yeah, fantastic stuff. Looking forward to the quarterfinal this weekend, which is again Sunday at 12:30 Irish time. Okay, moving on to the other Challenge Cup Round of 16 game. That was Ulster. They were away to Montpellier. A big win here for Ulster away from home. 40 points to 17. Halftime score 17-7. The scoreline looks very, very one-sided. Sam, I think there was some outside factors here in the sense that Montpellier were down to 12 players at one stage. But regardless, I think Ulster fans aren't going to care about that, nor should they. They got a very, very big win away from home in a knockout game, especially in this year when they need something good to happen. During the week, Kitsoff is confirmed as leaving. You know, Ulster fans aren't going to care about how this win came about, Sam, aren't they? It's a knockout win. It's a bit of positive feed, a bit of positive news, similar to Connacht. They'll take it.
Yeah, they shouldn't care. Absolutely. As Connacht fans, we get it quite often. You get a good win and then all you hear is people caveating it with what the team you faced was or what ailments happened or what red card happened early on. And it's really annoying because that's all part and parcel of a game. Ulster had about 15 feckin' changes within 24 hours of the game on the squad that they had announced. But they went out there. It looked dead and buried at halftime. They hadn't looked great, you know, and it was kind of a bit cagey. And Williamson gets the red card, and they capitalize on it as they should, and they played really, really well. So I think they'll be happy. They've racked up they played 3 games with Murphy as head coach, and 2 of them were South Africa, 1 of them is France, and then next week they're in France again. Like, they've racked up some air miles in the last couple of weeks with them, but I think it's all going to be character building for them. You look at the squad, even with the injuries and the stuff that they had, you know, they had a quality standard of player there, and they do have a quality standard of player in their ranks, you know. Kids off aside because he's leaving. They have depth. There's a couple of positions maybe they feel as fans they're lacking top level depth, but I think that they're well capable of eyeing up this tournament as something to win, as are Connacht. You know, I think we'll fancy, if we beat Benetton, we'd fancy either Gloucester or Ospreys. You know, Gloucester away maybe a little less so, but you know, Ulster look at the other teams left in this, look at the draw and think, yeah, we fancy that. We fancy a bit of silverware. Murphy as interim coach will probably want to do something big and significant to get that bit of silverware. Top eight in the URC is also very important, so it's hard to know what will they'll do, but their fans, their players, they shouldn't feel in any way like it was less of a victory, because it was a huge victory for them just in the general shape and kind of flow of this season. They needed something like that, much like Connacht, and they got it. So I think that they'll be chuffed with it, and they'll use that as momentum to kind of drive on and start to see more positives under Murphy.
Yeah, definitely. Claremont Auvergne away to Claremont Auvergne, Westy, in the quarters. If you were an Ulster fan, kind of Sam touching it, but would you be confident going into this weekend?
I'd say it'd be, in one sense, it's hard not to be confident after that performance, after that kind of comeback, as Sam said, and looking at dead and buried at half time, and they had a kind of barnstorm in the second half. Winning on the road 2 weeks in a row in France is going to be very, very difficult. I'm not sure exactly what Ulster fans count as success at the moment. You know, with Richie Murphy coming in and having the tour to South Africa, that was always going to be a tough start, and then followed by, you know, now two away fixtures in France. So obviously not a promise shown from that. I would just be wary of a kind of a new coach bounce. Now, I know they didn't get the results in South Africa, but having that result and now going to Claremont again, I think Claremont are a great side. They have a great history in the Champions Cup. I know they're not necessarily at the historic level at the moment. I didn't see them play at the weekend, so I don't know kind of what form they've been in. But I think again, no more than ourselves, I think Ulster's about building a performance on that now. You know, they've a new coach in there. They've, as you said, they're finally losing Kitsoff. There's kind of issues around their squad that are overhanging for next season. So I think they're well capable of it. We kind of said it all season that, not that we threw the blame at Dan McFarlane, because I really don't think we did that, but they've always had the skill. They've always been a good team. They've just failed to kick on over the last few years. And this is a great opportunity for them to show some of that growth and to do some of that. But I think personally, I just think it might be a little bit too far. But I don't think that's the be-all and end-all, because no more than ourselves, they have to fight for a spot in the competition next year. They will have a league to focus on. So, yeah, I think they'll come out strong next week, but I think it might be a little bit too much for them.
Yeah, that's fair. Just shout as well to David McCann, winning player of the match. I think Ulster will need players like him, and he is stepping up now, but him and Izachuku and Balakun and all them, they need to kind of step up as well, I think, next season. And I think, again, David McCann has started to do that. By the way, player of the match winning Tissot watches, that's pretty cool. Do you remember, was there some game where some lad won a bag of spuds or something like that? I think it was down in South Africa or something, was it? Or something crazy?
There's a Twitter account that just highlights hilarious Man of the Match awards. And yeah, spuds was one of them. There's like a full ham in one of them. There's loads of things. But yeah.
And Bundy and Dave McCann going home with brand new expensive watches. Happy days if you're the boys. That was cool to see. But yeah, look, we'll keep an eye on. The fixtures really annoy me. Like, both Ulster and Ulster game and the Sharks game at the same time on Saturday is really frustrating.
It's strange, but like, you know, if Ulster can get over Claremont, and it feels like, I don't know, Westy, you might kind of have a feeling about this. It feels like there's about 5 or 6 years there when it was just constantly Claremont. It was like Munster or Leinster or Ulster were playing Claremont every fucking week. And then we played them once as well. And it was like, I swear to God, every time it's just Claremont in Europe. But it's kind of, so it's nice to throw back to that time in all our lives when we had to see Claremont every year. But I think if Ulster can get past Claremont, like, you know, Sharks can't play in South Africa in the semi-final because of the agreement. So they have to, I think it's the Stoop they picked as their neutral venue or their home venue for the semi-final, or Edinburgh, both of which I think Ulster will take a shot at. So, you know, with Connacht and Ulster, I think if you get through this week, I think you really make a go at it. Silverware is silverware at the end of the day.
It's also interesting because, like I said, I didn't see much of it, but, you know, the Claremont Sheeta game was quite close. And they're, I'm pretty sure they're pretty low down in the top 14. So no more than Ulster, maybe they'll look at focusing on the top 14 and improving the situation there. So Yeah, look, I can eat those words, and I think Ulster are definitely good enough to win it. But just yeah, maybe history is weighing on me a little bit.
Yeah, Claremont are 11th out of 14th in the top 14, so 8 wins from 20 games. So by no means dominating. Anyway, we'll move on from the Challenge Cup. We'll go up to the top table of European rugby, which is the Champions Cup. We'll start with Munster away to Northampton Saints after having played them in January in Thomond. It's back-to-back losses against the Saints, unfortunately, for Munster Rugby, losing 24 points to 14, a 10-point deficit. This is a cracking game. Great way to start your Sunday. I was sitting on the couch watching this at half 12. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And the first 10 minutes was really setting the tone for the rest of the game. It was physical. It was fast. Incredible defensive sets from Northampton, just keeping Munster at bay, which are probably up there in the top few teams in the world. When they are 5 metres out, they are very, very hard to stop. They're very good at getting over the line. And Northampton just stepped up time and time again to keep them at bay. 14 all at half time was a fair reflection, I think, of the game. But Munster and Northampton kind of taken blow for blow here. But what we saw here at towards the 60-minute mark of this game was the depth in terms of health and injuries. Northampton had a very, very strong bench to bring on, whereas Munster not so much. And that's where the difference was made. Then they scored 10 points in the second half, Northampton, to finish off Munster. Again, Munster, Sam, nothing really Munster could have done here. I would say differently. I think they played a pretty good game. I think this is one of the examples where you just kind of come up against a team that was a bit healthier, a bit better on you on the day. And that's how the game unfolded. I don't think there's too many regrets, I wouldn't say, for a Munster side of things, right?
No, Munster, you know, they can rue the losses and they can rue the various people that were out or sick on the pitch and stuff. And yeah, those are all contextualizing the result. But I think at the end of the day, I think that Northampton had a good game plan. And if they knew that Munster were tired, if they knew that Munster were going to leave Archer on for 80 minutes, if they knew that there was sickness in the camp, they did a really good job of running them ragged for 60 minutes and then taking advantage of it. I think it was Hendy came on. He was just phenomenal. So what Munster did what Northampton did quite smartly was, I think they traded blow for blow. They were explosive. They were quick in it. And I thought whilst fit and whilst able, so were Munster. But Munster just... it was just a step too far. It could be down to that sickness that we're hearing was rummaging through camp, rifling through camp. Like, I think Ty Byrne, he said he was one of the people who were sick, and he was absolutely sensational on the day. Craig Casey supposed to get sick at halftime. I actually didn't see that, but apparently he was getting sick on the pitch, which is not pleasant for anyone else playing. But you've got that Northampton team that are flying high in the league this year. They beat them before this season. They probably were... you know, they're feeling confident, but they're probably going, like, why are Munster fans and media saying that they're written off? You know, Munster are never a team to be scoffed at in game. So they've done all their due diligence, their preparations, and they've probably seen the weaknesses in terms of, like, players like Orgies Nyman having to pull out, and, you know, changes like John Ryan being named on the bench even though he was suspended, and then his suspension being upheld. All these things add to it and just allowed for, like you said, Northampton Saints just to be that little bit healthier on the day. They just a bit of a better standard off the bench, maybe quite an even standard of starting teams, a team that are first in the Premiership against a team that are, you know, maybe they're fourth in the league. It's hard to know if they're punching above or not quite hitting their stride yet, but they're a really strong team. They're kind of the type of team that never say die. And I wouldn't have put it past them to have won that game with all the controversy or with all the adversity that was thrown at them, with the players being out injured and the players they've had all season, and whatever curse they've done this season, whatever funeral they pulled in front of, or whatever something happened that cursed them for the season, their injury woes have just stacked up and stacked up and stacked up. But that can't be an excuse, much like I said, Ulster won't want to hear that they're result wasn't good enough or wasn't great because of the standard of player or the amount of players on the team on the opposite side of them. I think Munster can't use this as an excuse. Their fans were all very happy to say that they were going to, you know, put it up to them, and that this was Munster's type of game, and Munster loved the adversity. So they take it. They played against a Kryptonite team. They played against a team, you know, Courtney Laws at six as that extra little bulk there. They really went after a kind of a lighter Munster pack, just with all the players that were out, and that showed in the end.
Yeah, I think, look, Sam, that's Munster fans, man. It's always them against the world. I'm sure Nice 4 just signed for the Saints at some description. He's on the backroom staff somewhere.
Shout out Sean O'Brien, because I read today that Frisch has actually said the quote, "I'm not going to lie, that's ongoing," when asked about if he's playing in France next season or not. And I think Sean O'Brien is the perfect ready-made replacement for him. I don't think they need to look any further. They have him. I always thought that they brought him in with the idea that he would be a centre, and then Nankivell came in, and he's covering a lot of wing this year because of injuries, but he's a centre. He's a 13. And if they can get Kilgallen fit on the pitch — Kilgallen's injured again — they can get him on the pitch and have that Connacht 13, 14 kind of access there for them. That's still phenomenal. Like, Frisch is a great player, and they're losing a quality player if he does go. But I think Sean O'Brien has just been epic the last couple of weeks for him. He's really coming into his own as a player for Munster.
I thought he was hard. I thought he had his heart set for playing for Ireland, Sam. That's changed pretty quick, hasn't
Frisch?
It? Yeah.
Maybe saw Sean O'Brien. Set. He said, "I have no future here, lads."
Sean O'Brien has been brilliant for them. He's exactly the kind of physicality that they look for, and he was brilliant. Highlighting another couple of great performances, Tyburn was just, again, out of this world. He's probably one of the few forwards who can really, really change a game on his day. Like, especially in tight games, he just wins turnovers that have absolutely no right of winning. Him and O'Mahony were, you know, menaces in the line out. They were absolutely fantastic. But yeah, just come up too short. Obviously, shout out to George Hendy, who come on and scored two tries back to back. Fantastic performance from him. He's getting his name out there. His last try in particular, I don't know if it was fantastic attack or it was just really, really bad tackling from Crowley. Is bad enough. Zeebo just never gets low enough. I'm seeing a lot of people saying Zeebo had a great game. I personally didn't see it myself, but maybe that's just me. I thought Mike Haley was fantastic. I do think Mike Haley is up there with the Buckleys of the world of how the hell does that guy not have some Irish caps. I know Munster fans like to think everyone should have an Irish cap from if they play for Munster, but he genuinely is. I think he's just really unfortunate that he came around the tail end of Kearney and then the Hugh Keenan era, because he is absolutely brilliant. I thought he was fantastic. But yeah, Frisch himself, not his best game by any means. A couple of mistakes. Defensively in the midfield, Northampton sort of ate them up a little bit with a couple of their tries. Disappointing in that sense. But again, you know, you can nitpick like that, but Northampton just had too much for them, like they did in Thomond back in January. Much tighter game back then. But a fantastic game to watch as a neutral, that's for sure. Moving on then to the last province in action, which is Westie's beloved Leinster. They were in action. Sorry, Westie, what's the problem?
Where is that coming from, my beloved Leinster?
Are you not a fan?
I'm the only one here who's actually from Connacht.
Yeah, but you do love a few sticks of H. You know that.
Look, whether I'm kicking it right over or splitting the G, doesn't matter, man.
You and the guys at the bridge with Jamie Heaslip.
Me and the five-star guys.
Yes, Leinster hosted in the Aviva on Saturday evening. Leinster Tigers, another repeat of a group game. And it was another win for Leinster, coming out by 14 points of the victor, 36 points, 22. A much closer game than the scoreline would suggest. I think Leinster put up a very good account of themselves. Leinster, of course, just having too much, especially when you look at the starting team. It's just, you know, it's big name after big name. Gibson Park with a hat-trick of tries. In fairness to Gibson Park, he was interviewed afterwards. And the Craig Dolls of the world were trying to really big it up, and he was like, "Yeah, I was on the end pass every time, and I just walked the ball over." Like, he wasn't trying to take too much credit for what it was, which I appreciated. But Westie, what I kind of want to talk about, we'll get to the game, is we saw again a narrative among Irish rugby journalists about this game, saying that, you know, I think Rory O'Connor was saying that Leinster are limping into this quarter final. Just very negative around this team, considering A, they won by 14 points in a knockout game in Europe against Leicester, reigning Premiership winners.
Two years ago.
You know, going in now to a massive game, La Rochelle, but like, it never seems to be good enough with Leinster, and I'm by no means here trying to defend Leinster, but not every team and not every player is going to play to their best every week in, week out. We've seen that. It's rugby, it's sport, it's human nature. But yet, they're expecting Leinster to dominate these games. And again, won by 14 points. Was never in danger of losing this game. Just want to clarify that. Why do you think that narrative exists around Leinster? Or maybe is it just Irish rugby in general?
I think part of it, I think they go hand in hand in terms of obviously like Leinster and Ireland. I mean, even I think I was watching it on TNT, and I think they made reference to, you know, Ireland in blue once or twice, or maybe some people on Twitter making reference to it. Like, I think because it is so much of the Ireland starting team in there, it's impossible not to draw correlations between the players you're seeing. You know, when you're playing all, you know, 12 out of the starting team is the same for Leinster and Ireland. It's impossible not to draw those correlations. Especially then when you add to the bench, you have another, you know, five or six internationals on the bench to bring on should you need them. I think part of it is Leinster's own undoing. They've built themselves up so much in this competition over the last few years and kind of failed to get over the line. I'm not saying that they bottled anything, but, you know, just didn't see it through to the end. They've also been outspoken previous years. They've blamed the URC for them not progressing far enough in the Champions Cup, saying it doesn't prep them well enough. If you're going to talk down like that, you damn sure better be walking through every game but the final, if you think that's the case. I think that, like, I actually think the Leinster played quite well for large parts of the game. I think there are moments where they shut off in defence that Leinster really capitalised on and got their tries. To go to the Gibson Park point, I think one of the things that makes him, like, he's a great passer of the ball, he's really dynamic, he's really quick, but I think what really sets him apart is maybe you can maybe tie it in with game management, but when he gives that ball away, you can say, oh yeah, I was just on the inside, I just carried through, but he's there, and he's always there, and he always has the inside line. He is both ready to take the pass as he is to get hands on the bottom of the ruck and feed the ball. He is able to switch between either or incredibly well, and at a canter as well, at a strong pace when he's running a support line. So I think that it stems as well from maybe earlier on in the season. Leinster haven't been maybe as dominant as we've seen in other years. They've even lost more games in the URC this year than they've lost, I think, the previous 2 years combined, not including the knockouts. Kind of victims of their own success. But you have to be fair as well. Like, I would be the first person to, you know, like, I was up for Leinster at times, you know, at the weekend. You know, I wasn't up for Leinster in the final last year. I was up for La Rochelle. I wanted to see Ulster Milan win. I wanted to see Rog win. But you have to accept the fact that they've had a new coach come in November, in December, and they've had a lot of disruption after the World Cup. They now have, you know, those same 13 players, right? You can say, oh, it's Ireland in blue, but as similar as the systems may be, they're different systems and they're different coaches and they're different voices. So, like, you do have to give them some sort of leeway in building back up that cohesion in a Leinster team that is so heavily rotated so much. While you're trying to take on a new system from Nenabar, I've only seen clips now of the Chasing the Sun documentary, but some of the ways he talks about how they come up with game plans and stuff, he's clearly a very... he says that he kind of wasn't as detail orientated until he came to Ireland and saw how, because they have five times the registered players we have in South Africa. If somebody is really strong, really quick, but can't pass off his left, they spend a couple of weeks. So if it doesn't work out, they get rid of him. Whereas he got more used to dealing with players at a personal level in Ireland. But he's a really methodical thinker. There's definitely a lot of nuance to the game that's being brought in, maybe more so than was there before. And it's going to take a while for it to fully take shape. I think what still stands is they are so dangerous with a half gap, and they got the result in the end. And as you said, they were never in doubt. I think they've just set too high standards for themselves. And, you know, maybe they went too long without actually, this is going to sound like a real insult, but they went kind of too long without actually following through, you know, without actually winning at the end. So there's only so much of that you can take before the narrative slightly turns against them. And it's, well, you're not actually performing to your own standards. While I think it's perfectly justified, it's kind of a tunnel of a wind tunnel they created for themselves, you know.
Yeah, that's really good points. And Sam, with La Rochelle coming to town this weekend, plenty of demons there. The last two finals, La Rochelle have kind of ripped their hearts out in different various ways. I think La Rochelle will beat them again. We'll get to predictions maybe in a few minutes, but It was like when you look ahead to this weekend, as Wes said, no Sexton this year, new coach, new systems. You know, Ross Byrne maybe taking the lead at 10. How do you view this weekend going ahead?
I don't know if I'm. This is my heart or my head, to be honest. But I think La Rochelle as well. I think that the monkey. Everyone said the monkey was off the back with the result earlier on in the season, but knockout rugby is a different thing. Leinster are actually very good at knockout rugby. Like the losses they've had in the last few years have all been finals. So, you know, they've gotten through a lot of knockout to get there, finals and a semi-final. But they've done really, really well the last number of years. They've just not quite had it. And they've had people like Rory O'Connor blowing hot air up their ass for so long that now he's having to take a bit of humble pie and maybe talk about how it's not plain sailing. They don't win every game 50-0, but they know how to win games. And that's all that really matters. You know, the transition from Sexton to Ross Byrne or Harry Byrne or Frawley or whoever it's going to be, or Sam Prendergast at 10, I think has been made easier with Gibson Park's step up in standard. He's gone from being an extremely good player to a mainstay for both Leinster and Ireland to now being integral to both Leinster and Ireland. You know, he's the heart and soul of that Leinster team. He, like what Wesley says, he runs those lines. He allows players like McCarthy to get the offload after they do strike moves with a second row, which is just unheard of. So it's a great place for them to be at, because I don't think Ross Byrne or Harry Byrne or whoever it is that starts at 10 is as needed to dictate the game and manage the game as Sexton kind of made himself, or the coaches made the team around Sexton. I think that they've changed up and they've spread the onus on the players. Osborne and Henshaw had brilliant games in the centre. I think it'd be hard but if Ringrose is available, you probably see him coming in for Osborne, which is very unfair because I think Osborne's been class as well. So it's a really hard place to know and to see how they are. If La Rochelle watch that game, I think that they go bomb the balls down. They were fielding high balls, fielding up and unders was the only obvious weakness of that Leinster performance. They weren't fully at the races in terms of what they have capability-wise, but I think that's where you'll exploit. And I think the Raj will look at the game and look his lips and kind of go, look, that's what we'll do. We'll just rain it down, particularly on Jordan Larmour, and hope for the best there. Use Will Skelton, use that size, come through it. In Joe McCarthy, they have a bigger player in Jenkins off the bench. They have, you know, the bigger players, bigger units to try and fight it. But I'm going to admit it. I don't want to be wrong in this. I hope that La Rochelle win. And, you know, Leinster could well pull it out of the bag because they are a phenomenal group of players and they are a phenomenal team. But I think that the ghosts of knockout games past will come to haunt them again. And La Rochelle will, you know, even the win that they got at the weekend, that's just going to give them more belief. Regardless of where they are in a match, they know they can win. And the manner in which they've beaten Leinster in finals in the past just proves them that they're never out of a game. And they have the bulk and the size. And I think that they have somewhat of a game plan laid out for them by that Leicester team. Nibar's defense, it's, you know, it's a blitz defense. It's up quick. It gets in your face, but it is get attable. You know, you go over it or you go around it, but you can do that. And I think La Rochelle starts with the team is capable of doing that, but it's also capable of holding its own up front and drawing them in and creating a really, really scrappy game. And it'll nullify the likes of a McCarthy or a Dyrus or Van der Vleer, stop them being able to do what they do best. And that will really, Leinster will find it hard to play. So it could be a tough, tough game for Leinster. Potentially sell out in the Aviv. We're close to sell out in the Aviv. It could be a big difference maker. So that might be that. But the La Rochelle boys are getting used to the wind and the rain down in Cork this week. So
yeah, no, that's fun. Just early look at the bookies. Leinster 7-point favourites again. I just don't know how La Rochelle plus 7 points is even odds. I just don't know how that's... There's no way this game is more than like a 4 or 5 point, I think, either way. There's too much history with these teams. That's always been close games. They've always been within a kick of each other, basically, towards the end. So I think we know which way I'll be betting.
But if Leinster were to run in... Like, if Leinster had the game against La Rochelle this weekend as we had against Pau, where it was very cagey and very close until the last minute, but they got a score that put them 10 points clear and it looked like a big win, I think that could be the making of Leinster for like 3 years, and they just go on and they just be undefeated because they would have gotten that knockout against a bigger team, monkey off their back. I think the one earlier in the season will definitely have helped, but it's not knockout rugby against La Rochelle.
Yeah, but didn't they go like 21-0 up last year in the final? You know, I don't know. I think it comes down to La Rochelle are willing to get way dirtier and in the mud than Leinster are, no matter how much they don't want to admit it. Like, La Rochelle are the kings of being cynical. I don't necessarily love it the whole time. Like, everyone, I know Will Skelton is getting praised for protecting the player on the ground, all that. Will Skelton is one of the biggest thugs in world rugby at the moment. Like, I'm going to say that. He is. But that's why he's so good. And that's why he's under Leinster's skin. They fear him. There's no doubt about that. But anyway, we'll give prediction before we finish up. Westy, I'll start with you. Ulster, Claremont. I think we know which one you're going with here.
I hope I'm wrong, but I'm going to go Claremont.
Okay, Sam.
I hope I'm wrong, but I'm going to go Ulster. I don't want to play Ulster. I'd fancy Connacht against everyone else in that tournament. In if we went through against Benetton, I'd look at all those. Ulster would scare me the most because just the idea of losing to another province in like a final would just kill me.
I'm gonna go with, I think Claremont will win. Connacht Benetton. I will start this one. I think it'll be a clean sweep. Connacht Rugby.
Yeah, you didn't tell us. I'm trying my hardest not to interrupt because I've been so chastised for interrupting.
I like the way if I had said nothing there, you guys would have sit in silence for like 30 minutes waiting.
If my partner is away, I sit most days in silence. I often go full days without speaking.
And some of the happiest days of your life. Some of the happiest days ever.
I think Connacht as well. I actually think just off the back of that weekend, I think Benetton and drop down a little bit from the start of the season. They've got their internationals back, but it looked like it disjointed them more than anything when we played them the last time. They got fortuitous try at the end. Bundy will make a big difference if and hopefully he plays. I think Connacht will do it.
Westy, will Bundy Claus be given presents to the kids of Benetton?
I just wish Santi was coming. Yeah, my heart says Connacht. My head is different, but I'll go with Connacht.
And finally, Leinster, La Rochelle. I think La Rochelle will win again. But, you know, who knows? Could be wrong. Wes, he'll throw it back to you.
Kick it over.
I'm so tempted to say. No, I'm going to go La Rochelle.
Kick it right over.
No,
kick
I can't
it right
do it. La Rochelle.
Yeah. Sam, the only thing that stopped me is thinking of like the irony of them winning without Sexton.
It would actually, it would be quite funny. I think La Rochelle as well. There's just something about that La Rochelle. Even though they're not playing particularly well this season. Like, it's not the La Rochelle of the last few years, but you just get hang-ups about teams. It just happens, and that's that DNA thing we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. That just exists in sport. There is just emotion that is attached to sport.
I agree. Now, the fact that we've all picked La Rochelle, watched Leinster, and I just run away with this game. Lads, it's been great. Thank you so much. We will wrap it up there. We'll be back next weekend to recap all the knockout rugby. And until then, we will see you. Lads, appreciate it. Catch you next week.
Night-night.